Bonjour, Nandin Away Magani Dog. Peshigo Benesia Que Indigo, Mang in Du Dame. Ga osas quajime cog in Duin Jaba. Ga masqua wako cog nin da. Elaine Fleming Nindishin a cause. Ah, Nin, hello, all my relatives. The name the universe knows me by is One Thunderbird Woman. And I'm with the Loon Clan. I'm a member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, Gausa Squajimekog, the place where there were leeches. And I live in a little city called Cass Lake, Minnesota, but we know it as Gamisquawakokog, the place where there were red cedar trees. I am known as Elaine Fleming in this colonized world. And I welcome you to History of Leech Lake. So I've been talking about the 1847 treaty. You know, when I think about these treaties and the Sandy Lake tragedy, it just like bam, bam, bam. All this, all of these things, they happened so close together, and it just so greatly affected us. That 1837 treaty, 10 years later, the 1847 treaty, and 3 years later, the Sandy Lake tragedy, and then 5 years later, the 1855 treaty, which establishes Leech Lake, Cass Lake, Winnipegosish, and White Oak Point reservations. And I cannot fathom how it must have been to live in those times. But I was talking about that 1847 treaty, and we the pillagers, had agreed to cede 700,000 acres of land to the U.S. government. And we were willing to do that for no annuity monies, and because there was a promise to us that if we ceded this land, then a reservation would be created, and it would become a reservation that would for the Menominee people, and it would always remain Indian land, and it would be a buffer zone between us and the Dakota people. And we so wanted peace. We wanted peace of mind. That whole thing. In our legends, where we're always seeking peace because of the violence of historical trauma and colonization. So what we got, the pillagers, for that 700,000 acres was $19,000 worth of dry goods and a promise. And that was to create that reservation for the Menominee that would be the buffer zone. And we got along with the Menominees, and we wanted peace for our people. So the promise found in Article 3 of the treaty was considered a contractual agreement to us. The pillagers thought of this as their land that we were lending to the U.S. government to be used as a reservation for the Menominee. This Indian land would not be forgotten, even after the Menominee decided that they wouldn't settle on this land. The Menominee, like many others, chose to remain on their own lands in the Wisconsin area. So consequently, the 700,000 acres of pillager land was ceded to the U.S. Later, this tract of land would be referred to as Royce 269 in a court case. The U.S. turned around and ceded the land to the Menominee in 1848. When the Menominee decided that they didn't want to live there, the U.S. government bought the 700,000 acres back from the Menominee and ended up paying them $262,000 plus good land for their own reservation back in Wisconsin. And this occurred in 1854. The pillager ban reminded the federal government that they had broken their promise of this 700,000 acres remaining Indian land in a buffer zone. The pillagers petitioned for payment for the land, which after 1864 was opened up for settlement and sale under the Homestead Act. To add to the injustice, Liquor was being sold in this territory, which was supposed to remain Indian land. The area was profitable to the settlers who made money off the sale of liquor, and liquor was not to be sold on Indian land. Consequently, in 1911, President Taft, through Executive Order 1911, proclaimed that this land was no longer considered U.S. Indian land, and liquor could now legally be sold there. The borders of the Ojibwe were consequential to their peace of mind. Since the Menominee chose not to live there, the Ojibwe now had to contend with the border with settlers who did not respect them or their human and legal rights. Dr. Anton Troyer writes about this particular back matter that was discussed whenever the pillagers met with the government at meetings, such as when the Northwest Commission came right before the 1887 Dawes Allotment Act and the 1889 Nelson Act occurred. The pillagers continued to petition for redress of the sale of their land. The pillagers had received $19,000 worth of goods for 700,000 acres of land and a broken promise of peace. The Menominee had received $262,000 and good Wisconsin land for the in exchange for the pillager land. The history of the 1847 treaty begins somewhere in the middle of another story and moves forward. Leech Lake would file claims under the Indian Claims Commission Act for a fair value measure of compensation, and a decision would be made by the U.S. Court of Claims on the value of the land. This case, the pillager bands of Chippewa Indians in the state of Minnesota versus the United States, was decided on July 15, 1970. Leech Lake claimed that the value of the 700,000 acres ceded in the 1847 treaty should be based on land value in 1911 when President Taft abrogated the trust status of this land rather than the land value in 1848 when the 1847 treaty was enacted and the land was ceded to the Menominee. During the 1970 case, Leech Lake provided evidence from the 1889 Rice Commission report. In it, the head of the three-man committee who came to Leech Lake to get the Ojibwe to agree to the Nelson Act, which would enact the 1887 Dawes Allotment Act, was Henry M. Rice. In 1889, Rice was the last surviving government negotiator for the 1847 treaty. When the Leech Lake Ojibwe petitioned the Rice Commission to settle the matter of the 700,000 acres of pillager land, Rice referred to the land as being loaned. He said, "The land that you loaned your great father 42 years ago." When this language was shared with the United States Court of Claims in 1970, the Leech Lakers were reminded that earlier in 1880, Rice had written a letter to a pillager chief in which he said, "The sale of Royce 269 was positive. The pillagers have no legal claim to the land, but morally have a claim upon the government, which claim I hope may at some suitable time be acknowledged by giving to this poor band such aid as will improve its condition." The U.S. Court of Claims claimed that this earlier statement by Rice nullified the claim that the land was loaned. The court then decided that Leech Lake would receive full fair market value based on the 1848 treaty rather than the 1911 executive order in which President Taft declared Royce 269 no longer being Indian land held in trust. It was said, they will now receive the full fair market value for the land ceded, less the payments actually made by defendant. Thereby, the plaintiffs will be fully compensated for any overreaching which they may feel occurred at the treaty negotiations. They will, in short, receive as a result of this proceeding the amount to which they would have been entitled in 1848 if the settlement of the Menominees had never been a factor. but the government had simply wished to obtain for itself the land of Area 269. For these reasons, we hold that the Commission correctly chose April 7, 1848 as a valuation date, court case. And so these stories, they go on and on. The stories about the 1847 treaty and then what happens in 1970 concerning that same 700,000 acres. Miigwech bisandawiyeg. Miigwech you all for listening. Miigwech.